This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. It is Tuesday afternoon, and he joins us on Tuesdays to talk growth and development here in Central Virginia. Charlottesville Tomorrow online at cvilletomorrow.org. And it's been a while since you have reminded us what Charlottesville Tomorrow is. And why don't we do that really quickly before
I'd be glad to, Coy. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization that focuses on land use, transportation, community design issues exclusively in the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County. And so we track those issues. We go to public meetings. We put audio from these meetings up on our website. We write stories about them like a news organization would. And we also cover the politics of local elections for city council and board of supervisors, but again, in a nonpartisan way, and we don't endorse anybody. It's all about getting the best information out there to the public.
And making it more of a possibility that folks, busy folks who are in this area, who are very busy but care, can get information and get involved.
If you come to cvilletomorrow.org and click the sign up link, you'll get about one email a week from me that says what's going on every Monday, and we sort of recap the previous week and outline some of the things you and I talk about on our show
That email, and it comes to me in my email inbox. It says, "Dear Coy, here's the very latest from Charlottesville Tomorrow," and it has the listings of all the recent news articles that you've put on your website.
Yep.
It has all the meetings that are going on in the city and the county, whether it's a planning meeting or a water meeting or a neighborhood meeting, something going on. You basically are in touch with all of that kind of stuff that's going on in this area.
We try to be. It's a growing list of meetings.
Where should we start today? What's the hottest thing here? What we already have a...
And I can just point out right now that on the County Planning Commission tonight...
Very nice, Brian. Very nice.
Thank you. Another segue for me. Bob's interested in history. Well, they are rewriting the history that's going to take place in the future for Crozet by talking about the downtown zoning. And that's something that the Planning Commission will be having a meeting tonight, 6 o'clock, County Office Building. And so anyone in Crozet who wants to be involved in those decisions about where development will be, what it will look like in the downtown area of Crozet, that's an opportunity to get involved.
Now, this is different from the Crozet Master Plan.
Well,
this is sort of a mini downtown plan.
It's more detailed, yeah. So it's more constrained right around the downtown area. And one of the things happening with the Crozet Master Plan is that there are other town centers being built in Crozet in the growth area. So you've got Old Trail Village, which is about to break ground on their town center. And that will, one of the fears of longtime Crozet residents is that that would create a new downtown that would compete with existing businesses in the current downtown, the historic downtown. So this is to sort of lay the groundwork for how downtown Crozet can remain vibrant, have lots of businesses, pedestrian friendly. They've put in sidewalks and streetlights recently in part of downtown Crozet. But the downtown is challenged by both railroad tracks and the lumber yard that are right in the middle of downtown Crozet. And its future will involve, a new main street that'll be built through part of that property at some point when the owner of that property is ready to let that go.
So are they going to tear down that string of buildings where Crozet Pizza is? Is that slated to be torn down? That's the part of town you're talking about, right?
Well, that's a good question. That's on the other side of the railroad tracks there from where the main street will be. But that was a development proposal that was under review. The emphasis of that has shifted over towards the IGA grocery store,
and
redeveloping that side of it first. There was some feedback given to the developer, though, who basically owns from the Dairy Queen corner, the other side, where the red buildings start, the old historic buildings related to
the fruit store
industry is actually what those buildings were part of.
Oh, no kidding, really?
And that all the way up to the IGA. There's one person that owns all that property, and they did have a plan that would redevelop the whole thing. And I think they backed off on that a little bit, but I'm not quite sure where the Crozet Pizza block ended up in the most recent plans.
Yeah.
I think that's right now being left alone, but they're going to come back to that at some point.
So across the railroad tracks from that, so on the other side, opposite the library,
right,
that area in there.
Old library. It's still the current library, but they're building a new library.
What I know of is the library in Crozet.
The old train station.
It's the old train station,
right.
So they're having a meeting tonight, and folks can go out to that meeting and share their two cents and their thoughts about what the future downtown parts of Crozet should look like.
And if you miss the meeting, it'll certainly, there'll be a summary on Charlottesville Tomorrow's website tomorrow. But also, I know the Crozet Community Association follows these issues very closely. They will certainly have people there and be reporting back at their monthly meetings.
And isn't there a Crozet newspaper now?
There is, the Crozet Gazette.
Yeah.
And that's Mike Marshall's publication. And, and Mike is typically at all these meetings as well.
Good for Mike. There you go. That's what it's all about. So when would all this start? I mean, you know, just a big picture here. When would we expect there to be a new downtown Crozet?
Well, it's I wouldn't call it a new one as much as sort of laying the groundwork for how future development will take place. So it has to do with how high the buildings will be. Will they be mixed use? In what places will you have industry? In what places will you have offices? So it's more defining the types of uses that you would have and where they'd be allowed within the zoning. So this is to create a new zoning district. This is, you know, in the you know, government parlance, this is in the nitty-gritty of the zoning ordinance. But the public really learns that makes a big difference.
Yeah,
That zoning ordinance is written. Because in the future, they're going to ask, how did that building get built? And it'll be from decisions made, you know, tonight.
Oh, well, we had a meeting back in January and figured out that we could. They had that one big high rise, which set an interesting precedent in downtown Crozet, which it's not Section 8 housing, is it? Or it's
No. It's actually now, I think, managed by the Jefferson Area Board for Aging. I might be wrong about that, but I believe it is. And
it's the one building around here that you can actually see from the Blue Ridge.
Yeah.
So you always know where Crozet is because you can see that high rise in Crozet.
So an assisted living facility that's been used to be part of a cold storage facility for the fruit again, and has a new life now.
Yeah. Would we perhaps see future buildings like that in Crozet as a part of the future of the growth there?
Sure.
I mean, developers could point to that and say, look, you already got a high-res over there. Why can't I build another one?
Well, and this zoning will set the height limits, and I don't have that in front of me. But yes, it will define how high they can go and how much parking there will be and what requirements will be for sidewalks and all those things.
Yeah. Well, I know personally a lot of folks who were attracted to live in Crozet and deal with the commute into Charlottesville because they liked that very small-town feel. They liked how things were. So I imagine some of them might be out at that meeting saying, look, we don't, as we grow, we want to keep a real hold on this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Martha is on the phone in Albemarle. Martha, you're on with Brian Wheeler. You go right ahead.
Hi, thanks very much.
Absolutely.
I'm calling because we have a new cell tower that's been put up in our, you know, in our view towards the Blue Ridge. And it just gave us quite a surprise because we were not aware of it. It's not on our property and we don't adjoin the property that it's on. So we weren't notified with no warning. All of a sudden, it sort of looks like a smokestack. And then I used my binoculars and figured out what they were doing. And we're really hoping for some changes on the way they give out permits for the cell towers.
Well, that's a good question, Martha.
How does that work anyway?
Well, they have to come and get a permit from the Planning Commission to do this. And it's, you know, one of the things, I think if you drive through Albemarle County on I-64 and you think about how many cell towers you see from the road.
Or 250. Because there's a couple in Ivy, I know about.
And
they just put up a new one in Ivy.
Contrast that with driving near Richmond and the towers that you see along the interstate, you know, south of here, east of here. It's much different, and credit to our Board of Supervisors for setting some pretty strict standards for how high those towers can be, how camouflaged they have to be. I mean, they worry about the color, how high above the tree line. For each one of these applications, Martha, as I think you know, they have to float a balloon to show where the top of the tower will be, and then they take pictures from different perspectives.
Right, and actually, you're right that they've probably done a pretty decent job, but I just don't believe they're doing enough. For example, the floating of balloons, if they could keep something floating up long enough so that people in the area could see something coming. In our case, I mean, I learned that they just float the balloon for an hour until they have photographs, but they clearly didn't take any pictures from our house, because I don't think it would have passed if they had seen what's up there now.
I think the county has gotten feedback not just on cell towers, but any development where people within a certain radius, you know, I don't know if it'd be feet or miles, but where people want to know what's going on in their part of the county,
yeah,
or the city for that matter. And one of the things, they're making steps in the right direction. So the old way of notifying people was put up a sign, a zoning notice sign, which has a number on it. You can go to the website and figure out what it refers to. It also has a phone number you can call
and check it out. But we see those on the driving down the road for a few seconds as you're driving by.
But
you put a pole that's 99 to 120 feet in the air, that's a lot different than finding a little post on a board.
Let me just finish, though. I mean, I haven't seen the tower Martha's talking about, but the county now makes these signs available on a GIS map on the county website where you can pull up your property and see if there are any zoning notice signs around you. So that's you're still asking the citizens to be proactive about that. One of the pieces of feedback I know has been given to the county is let the county come to you on something like that so that you could sort of, you know, log in to your view of Albemarle County and say anytime anything within 10 miles of my house is being done, send me an email about it. And I hope the county will head that direction. They certainly have...
Also, Brian, I hate to interrupt you, but the neighbor of mine that also has it in their view, which is it's also horrendous. Their property wraps around and is contiguous to this property. They were called about this pole going up, and it was described to them, and they agreed based on what was told to them. It was very hard without a balloon being there to really see where it fits into the landscape. So again, that's really why I'm hoping that, you know, they have those big balloons that float over car dealerships, and I would think that the companies that are trying to earn a living this way by putting posts up could actually purchase these floating balloons and just let people know. It's just much easier.
And leave them up for a while so that people could see.
Leave them up for 2 weeks or whatever, yeah.
And you could set a standard saying, you know, if you see one of those black balloons or whatever, that's going to be a possible cell tower location.
And there you go.
And Martha, exactly. in your location, it sounds like that balloon would have been readily visible. I can tell you in the imagery that I've seen shown in front of the Planning Commission, oftentimes the balloons are hardly visible. So there may be a size question about the balloon or, you know, whether you need the blue light special kind of light blinking over that site. But in general, you know, I certainly hear what you're saying. It'd be better to make sure more people are aware of it. But I would, you know, say that I haven't heard about many of these controversies lately. Typically, there's not a lot of public comment on these applications. Now, again, that may be because not enough people are being notified. But they haven't been as controversial as they have been in the past because of the new standards the county has in place.
Mm-hmm. Martha, thank you so much for the call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you joining the conversation. We're talking with Brian Wheeler. It's Tuesday on Charlottesville Tomorrow. That means growth and development. That's what we talk about. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, and he joins us on Tuesdays to talk growth and development. And we've got to talk about we were talking about it last week, and we'll be talking about it again next week, and we'll talk about it again the week after that. Because this is just, this stuff is happening right now in Albemarle County with this, what they call Rural Protection Area Ordinance, is that what they call it is? And some folks call an assault on property rights, however you want to look at it. Everybody's got a different name for it because it has become truly a hot political issue.
Yeah, well, in the previous segment, we were talking about zoning ordinances around Crozet, how important those were. Certainly, these were rural protection strategies that some supervisors are trying to get incorporated in the county's ordinances are very important to the public at large. And, you know, I have to start off by saying, Coy, last week I was wrong.
No, Don't say it.
I was wrong. I predicted the next day that there'd be a 4-2 vote to pass these things, and it didn't happen.
Oh, that's right.
So,
yeah. What did happen?
I want the record to be clear that I was wrong. And what did happen was it came up in the meeting that they were ready to talk about it. It was on the agenda. Of course, it was put on the agenda while Ken Boyd was out of town.
Yeah, because he would have not wanted it to be on the agenda.
Mr. Boyd was chair. Well, he wanted it to be on the agenda in a different way, in more work sessions and break them out, talk about each one separately, get more public feedback.
Yeah, it's easier to defeat him that
way. The majority of the supervisors put it on the agenda and said, let's have a decision last week. And then it snowed, and that shut down the county office building for a couple of days. And then there was a Martin Luther King holiday, And so suddenly then they were back in their meeting, and Sally Thomas sort of started the Mr. Boyd started the conversation by saying, I want to open this up to a public hearing. And that was clearly something he had planned on doing. He said on WINA that he was going to do that, use his prerogative as chairman to, you know, add some public comment on the agenda.
Yeah.
There were, I think, about six people who came and signed up and were ready to talk about it. But Sally Thomas pointed out that it had been hard for the public to call members of the staff and get more information about the changes.
Because they were closed.
Because they were closed.
Yeah.
So, and Mr. Boyd just thought that was a brilliant observation by Sally Thomas. And he said, you know, I'm all for delaying this. And then Sally Thomas said, well, we've already got people here, so let's have them talk. And Mr. Boyd thought that was also a good idea.
Yeah.
So they took some public comment. They got a brief staff report. You can listen to the staff report and this discussion back and forth by the supervisors up on Charlottesville Tomorrow's blog. You can listen to the audio. And but they punted till February 6th, their next day meeting.
And that doesn't mean that the votes still aren't there and that this vote ain't going to happen.
I'm not going to make any predictions anymore, Coy. But if you read Sevo Weekly has two stories about this in their issue today. Handicapping Will Goldsmith says what he thinks is going
to happen. Oh, the new Seville is out. That's right.
The new Seville is out.
What does Will Goldsmith say it's going to happen?
His headline here, of course, the reporters don't always write the headlines, but it says, Bell could toll for property rights February 6th. Will board pass rural ordinances? There are two articles. So,
Or trumpets could blare for rural protection. I mean, how do you want to write it?
Well, it depends who's writing the story. And there's certainly people on both sides of this issue. Charlottesville Tomorrow doesn't have a position on these specific ordinances, but the public has spoken up loud and clear that they do value the resources we have in our farms, fields, and forest, and they want them protected. There are also some important reasons for protecting the watershed, and that's why we have some of these stream buffers established on streams that feed into our water supply. I heard a member of the public point out in the public hearing that he'd like that, you know, clearly advertised as 200-foot buffers because it is 100 foot on each side. And, you know, that's a valid point.
Yeah.
And he said he had streams all over his property, and that eats up a lot of his property. So you get feedback from people like that concerned about the limitations. However, if that person lives in the western part of the county that feeds into the water supply, they've already got those limits in place.
Yeah.
So this is a discussion about putting stream buffers on the other half of the county. And that sort of enabling authority comes from the Chesapeake Bay Protection Act, which says localities, especially those east of I-95 in Virginia, have to be especially careful with their buffers. But staff are sort of hanging their hat on the research that was done related to the Chesapeake Bay protection, saying 100 feet made sense and have as little disturbance as possible near our streams.
Brian, if there's anybody listening who is scratching their heads over this issue and wondering why the hell does it matter, how do these streams matter, can you explain very quickly in a nutshell this whole idea of sedimentation and the water supply? Just in a nutshell. Because there are people that don't get that.
Well, sure, and it depends where the stream is. If the stream feeds into our water supply, like the South Fork Ravanna Reservoir, which is, you can see the dam as you drive up 29 North and you cross over the river, you can look and see the dam spilling over, hopefully. And, you know, that reservoir is filling up with sediment. And the scientists are still trying to figure out exactly where the sediment comes from. Did it come from deforestation 400 years ago as Virginia was settled, or is it from recent development? And it's probably both. But I think the scientific consensus, as presented by folks at the Nature Conservancy here locally, is that 100 feet makes a lot of sense, and that helps prevent sedimentation from filling up the reservoir, but also choking the ecosystem, the aquatic life that lives in that stream.
Yeah. When the dirt gets in the stream and it fills it up and it kills the streams.
Well, that's just a much better way of putting it. Okay. Thanks for boiling it down.
That might be the nutshell I was looking for.
Yeah, sorry. I got scientific on you.
Yeah, but that's all right. So they're going to vote on this at some point.
Yeah, well, I do expect the vote. I'm not going to predict how the vote will go.
Yeah, yeah.
I am expecting the vote.
Let me ask you this.
On the 6th.
If I got a stream running through my property, what is to prevent me, and money obviously might be the big issue here, but is there anything technically or legally preventing me from doing what any developer does when they get ready to do a big shopping center. They take the streams and the water and they put it in those big pipes. And then you can put dirt on it and build on it if you want. As long as you've got it running and protected underground, any private landowner could do that if they wanted to spend the money, couldn't they?
They do that. It does take permits. Often the Corps of Engineers has to get involved in things like that. So it's not a simple process, and the developers will quickly point out how costly it is. On time and engineering work to figure out these stream crossings.
Yeah.
And they try to.
And then
to,
you got to buy those big old concrete tubes.
Sure. So it is possible. In the growth area, there might be one standard for doing that where the expectation is a lot of these streams will be buried. A good example is Albemarle Place. As Albemarle Place is built out, there's streams on that property that will be covered up and put underground. However, in the rural areas, there's a different expectation about that kind of development. And I don't know enough about the exact specifics, but you might be able to do it in certain places in the rural area, but there's a permitting process you have to go through.
Are they ever going to build that Albemarle Place?
I don't know. You know, somebody was shooting around an email the other day wondering if ownership had changed, and I haven't heard anything on that front. But they were encouraging the media to figure out had anything changed over there, and I don't have any information.
So that the owner might have said, "Hey, you don't have the sewer," because that was a problem. They stopped everything because they didn't have the sewer capacity.
Well, the owner, the front person, Frank Cox, said that it wasn't slowing them down, that they had other things that they had to get in place, and that they would work, you know, alongside of the sewer capacity upgrades that were taking place. I don't really
know. So there's a rumor that Frank Cox might have sold, or there might be a different...
That was the rumor, but I shouldn't have said that, so...
Oh, well.
I don't know.
It's only radio. I bet you before we see Albemarle Place, we're going to see some things happen over there where the Kmart is.
Right. Well, Whole Foods is moving over there.
Yeah. Because isn't Kmart, when their lease is up, Whole Foods is going in? Is that one rumor I heard?
My understanding is, and I haven't seen the plan, and I'm not even sure there is a specific plan yet, but going through the City Planning Commission is a proposal related to, I think they needed a steep slope waiver. You know where the car wash used to be?
Yeah, in front of where the movie theater used to be.
Right, in front of the Terrace Triple, which is now gone.
Yeah, because there's a road going through there.
Because the Hillsdale Drive is going through there. And in that area is where Whole Foods is proposed to go. But they needed a steep slopes waiver.
Oh, so it's not going where the Kmart is then?
I don't think so.
It's going to go sort of but in that general area.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I haven't seen a map.
It's supposed to be a much bigger Whole Foods.
I haven't seen a diagram. We'd love to put that up on our website if we had it.
Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. You can read all the latest news at seavilletomorrow.org. What else, my friend, is going on
all right, here's
God's country?
The other big thing going on has to do with the downtown mall.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're doing a big renovation project.
I love the downtown mall.
Well, it's time to fix the bricks.
Yeah, it's been 30 years.
And so there's a big plan in place, and they're starting a big community engagement process to get the public involved in looking at the new design concepts. They've got design concepts for you to look at. If you go to mydowntownmall.com,
I love it.
you can check those out. And I sat in on one of their public meetings yesterday, and there's a story about it up on our website and some of the pictures there. But, you know, they're talking about everything from a tree replacement program. Apparently, our trees have a limited lifespan in this harsh urban environment.
What kind of trees are those?
They are willow oaks, most of them. There are also ginkgos on the side streets. There are a couple red maples. The red maples are going to be replaced with a more tolerant species. But the willow oaks that everyone, you know, knows, the big trees, they might only last 40 to 60 years lifespan, whereas they usually would last 100 out in the wilderness. So they need to start a program of replacing them, and they're going to replace them with other willow oaks. But they just need to get that process going so they're not like clear-cutting them all. To do this.
Yeah, interesting. And isn't there some idea to put a lot more fountains back on the mall?
They are. They want to, you know, fix up the fountains we have, add a one that looks similar to the ones we have, those sort of square rock fountains. Yeah. But they also want to add in some other water elements, one between the Omni Hotel and the ice rink. That would be a cascading pool, stairs of water. There'd be a fountain at the top, and then it would cascade down several steps.
Yeah.
And then in front of Bashir's at the other end of the mall, right near the parking garage, out on the mall, there would be an interactive water feature that would be motion sensing. So people would walk over this, and then the spouts of water would just come up out of the street.
Is it? I think Boston has a huge thing like that, a big outdoor fountain that the kids play in.
And I don't know how they mark that to warn the business people walking by all dressed up in their suits and skirts.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they have a plan for that.
But that is very much in keeping with the original architectural vision for Charlottesville's downtown mall. And I only know this because Haw Spencer did this research and was telling me about it, that the guy who designed the
downtown... Yeah, Lawrence Halprin.
Is it Halprin?
Yep.
The vision was that there would be a lot of fountains and that you would be able to interact with them. And it would be, you know, now they're all roped off, but that you would be able to go up and take your shoes off and during lunch and put your feet in the water.
They're definitely getting closer to that. And the group is MMM Design Group. And Chris McKnight and Taylor Gould from that organization were describing how they were going to pay tribute to the original design, implement some of the things that weren't implemented in the very beginning, and but also bring in some new ideas. So that's in progress. Also, if you go to mydowntownmall.com, there's a survey, and they desperately want public feedback on what people's priorities are for the downtown mall.
Survey. Get involved. Do the survey.
And the business community has serious concerns about the construction project, how that will be phased. They're going to put the committee said here they're going to put a lot of effort and money into a marketing campaign to try to keep people coming to the mall and not be afraid of being around the construction. But they haven't figured out how to phase that or do it in steps yet.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We have a couple of minutes left if we can.
Yep.
What's this about this Eastern Connector?
Because yeah. Well, I don't think this has been in the mainstream media too much.
Break the news, Brian. Break it right here.
All right. The news is, and the Eastern Connector Steering Committee doesn't even have this information yet. Well, they might have gotten it since then, but they haven't had this presentation yet. We went to the Metropolitan Planning Organization meeting, and the consultant working on the Eastern Connector, which is a road to connect 29 North over to Pantops through one of several different routes, is being discussed. And the public gave some feedback at the end of last year and basically said, start over. We don't like any of the concepts. There was some concern about how much time it would save if you were commuting along those paths. So it's the routes they've been looking at are up around Profit. So that's the northernmost route. Polo Grounds Road is the middle route. And then the third route is through Penn Park and then around the edge of the other park in the county. Totally blanking on it. Dardantown Park.
Yes.
And so that option, it turns out, the news is the data supports the Penn Park route for the Eastern Connector.
So that's the recommendation that's coming out of this group.
Not yet. But the consultant is just giving them the data and saying that of the three options, that one will remove the most traffic from Freebridge and 250. If you want to move the traffic and reduce that congestion, the best way to do that is have an Eastern Connector that's a local road through Penn Park in some fashion and around Dardantown Park.
That's also would be the cheapest road, I would imagine, because it's the southernmost route. It's through parkland, you know, land they already have.
It depends on the bridges, and there's some substantial bridges that have to be built to cross the Ravanna. I'm not sure it was the cheapest option, and that information is on the website. I just didn't bring it with me. So anyway, that's the news. There's new data out there, and it's in response to the public perceptions. Perception number one was, we don't need this road. Let's build an eastern bypass. Something that just takes people totally around Charlottesville instead of trying to help them within Charlottesville.
That's the one I like.
And that perception, former Councilor Kevin Lynch really honed in on and said, listen, we have this license plate study from 1999. Let's go back and look at that data. The consultant did that. The data says this is a local problem. Only 5% of the traffic is really trying to get from outside our area through here and then out to some other external location.
Most of it is people who like live in Pantops who are trying to go to Target or Walmart.
Yeah, Dennis Rooker said it best. He looked around the room and he said, look around the room, the problem is us. So the Eastern Connector is proposed to be a local road to help fix a local congestion problem.
And it would go from 29 North somewhere to Pantops.
Right.
To that big crowded intersection.
It would connect over to Route 20, and then 20 would feed into 250 at Pantops.
Yeah.
So there is certainly concern about what would happen at the 250-20 interchange.
That's the part I've never understood about this, is all you're doing is dumping a whole bunch of traffic into an already choked intersection up around Pantops.
Right. And, you know, Meadow Creek Parkway is a similar concern where it runs into Melbourne Road, which would be an at-grade intersection. So they do have some issues to figure out there. But anyway, this is new data. The consultant basically tried to figure out at peak hours what would be the best solution, and the Penn Park made the list.
You've been listening
Brian
to
Brian Wheeler is the executive
right
director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Brian, thank you so much.
Right
thank
now
you.
Is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.